Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. Join us each week as we delve into some of life's most complex questions. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale.
Rick? Oh.
Yeah,
Were you gonna do the intro, or you know, we're just
it is Thursday night, and if you can hear our voices, you're exactly where you need to be. She is Karen Frazier. I am Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at hazyradio.com. You know what? For the last 2.5 years, we have been hearing like the blues music, and I'm waiting for it, and nothing. So,
but did you notice whose name after 2.5 years is finally first? Thank you, Cheryl.
Yes, thank you, Cheryl.
You're welcome.
Yes, that is exactly the way it should be. So, everybody, new home, but of course we are having those awful, terrible technical difficulties, which is why I oftentimes have called ourselves the destination truth of paranormal radio. Would you not agree, Karen?
Well, I don't think it's so much as that. You know, so when we first moved into the house that I live in now, I could not figure out which light switch operated which lights. And, you know, so it's a growing process. And, right. Cheryl, I'm happy to tell you that I've lived in my house for 10 years now, and I still don't know.
Oh.
Oh. Yeah, that's right. So, don't you have, like, that one phantom one that you have no idea whatsoever?
Yeah. Yes.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
And it probably turns down your neighbor's, you know, like your neighbor's ceiling fan down the road from you or something.
You're like,
how the hell?
We have two light switches that we don't know what they operate, but we actually, one of the kids flipped one time and it like blew all the fuses, so we've never touched that one again.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are here. We are on the Hazy Radio Network, and
we're happy to be
here. We are very, very happy to be here. Sorry about the technical difficulties. Sorry about my brain fart there, but I was waiting for some sweet Kevin MacLeod music to play us in, you know, because it's like Chicago blues and all that. So, all right, on tonight's show, what we have the first hour, we have a pre-taped interview with Steve and Amy from the Dead Files. When was that we talked to them, Karen, when we did this pre-taped
show? Oh, my gosh, I don't know. It's been a couple of months now.
Yeah, you know what? We really like them. They seem to really like us, especially over the Travel Channel. So, you know, it was a really good interview, went really well. Always like talking to Steve and Amy because they're a class act. They really are.
That's right.
Sorry.
So, you know what we're going to do is we're going to get right to that interview because we actually have a guest coming on at 7 o'clock or shortly thereafter, and right. We'll go to about 7:45 with them, and then we'll let you yap at us.
Right.
Or we'll yap at them. Yeah, that's it. Oh, my God. So, anyway, without further ado, Cheryl, you have it queued up, right?
We're going to try.
Okay, everybody keep your fingers crossed. Mecca lecca hi, mecca hi, ni ho. Isn't that what like Pee-wee used to say or something?
Yeah.
So, fingers crossed, mecca lecca hi, mecca hi, ni ho. Here we go with Steve and Amy of the Dead Files.
Hi, this is Hazy, and you're listening to the Hazy Radio Network.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Hazy Radio Network, its affiliates, or sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only.
Hey, everybody, Paranormal Underground Radio listeners. We are your hosts, Karen and Rick, and joining us right now, and this is actually a pre-tape, so they won't be able to answer any questions. We have the cast members of The Dead Files. She is psychic medium or spiritual medium, Amy Allen. Welcome back to the show, Amy. Thank you for joining us again.
Hi.
And joining us again is probably the finest dressed ghost hunter in the history of television, and that is former homicide detective, New York homicide detective, Mr. Steve DeShavi. Hi, Steve. Thanks for joining us again.
Hi. Thanks for that intro. I appreciate it.
No problem.
You really are quite well dressed, I have to say. Yes,
yeah.
You are.
Well, thank you. I dress myself, just so you know.
Oh, well, very good. You don't have
so
a stylist or anything yet, huh?
Yeah, that'll be the day I get stylist.
Well, I have to tell you, I told you off the air, but I'll tell you now. I spent this morning catching up on some of your season 3 shows, and you guys are headed into season 4, is that correct?
Yeah, we're currently filming season 4.
All right, so lots of good stuff coming up for us?
Yeah, I mean, I think I could speak for Amy. I think our investigations are getting a lot more intense and a lot more, I guess, personal.
Personal in what way?
I think the clients we're meeting now have, you know, they got a lot of issues, and it's not just about their homes with stuff going on. They got a lot of personal things happening to them, and we're able to help, which makes it much better. So.
See, and that's kind of a question that I wanted to ask, because I did notice that as well when I do watch a show, and I do watch a show quite a bit. Do you guys keep anything, say, like a psychologist or a psychiatrist on staff to help these families? Because obviously some of these families are in a very bad place.
Well, I think with Amy's background, it helps. Me working the streets all those years, I pretty much have my own psychology degree as it
sure.
is. we don't, but we do give them, or Amy, I should say, gives them a lot of guidance on, you know, to take care of themselves and what to do.
My background is in psychology.
Oh, okay. Right. That definitely helps then.
Cool. Yeah, I have a degree.
Yeah, so one of the things that I wanted to ask you, Amy, in particular, was that I noticed that in some of the cases that you work, you mentioned something that I had not really considered before, and that's that you mentioned either spirits fragmenting into more than one entity or multiple spirits coming together to form one entity, and I hadn't heard about that before. I was wondering if you could talk a little more about that.
Well, at times, at times when people die, they, either their soul has shattered before, or it can, upon death, splinter. And so they'll have fragments, at various locations, depending on the past trauma that they experienced at that location. And so that can happen. And a lot of people will, it's similar to, I believe, like, in Native American practices, soul retrieval, where someone will go on a journey to make their souls or their person whole again. And it's by going through and re-experiencing these traumas that happen to them throughout their lives. I've, you know, witnessed people going back to specific locations where maybe they suffered some type of trauma and kind of making a reconnection with that part of themselves and being able to move forward from that. But unfortunately, sometimes, you know, people aren't capable of doing that for whatever reason. And when they die, you know, these fragments of them still exist.
Okay.
And then there's also a lot where you'll have, and usually it's in cases of like PK manifestations where there'll be a medium on location who also has PK ability and, you know, has formed or created a poltergeist haunting, and it's escalated to the point where it's actually manifesting into an entity. And on occasion, if there's dead people present at that location, they can kind of get trapped into that and become part of that entity.
There, because the energy helps to manifest PK.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
See,
wow,
now
that's
I've
really interesting.
Right, and now I've actually long believed that that kind of energy, I mean, does dispel quite a bit of emotional energy, and I've always believed that that did bring stuff in or wake things up. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, if you look at residual haunting, those stem from emotional traumas or even, you know, excessive happiness, and they stay imprinted at that location. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing for, like, you know, when you're splintering off, you know, it's just a little bit more substantial. It's a piece of that person that remains behind, not the mm-hmm. whole person, just an aspect. But it's more substantial than a residual type haunting. And as far as forming a PK manifestation, the more energy the medium utilizes in their environment, the better as far as really creating an entity outside of themselves. So if there's a dead person there, they're going to reach out and kind of capture their energy and put it into the being they're creating.
Got it.
These are things
very
that
good.
Dr. Roll, when I studied under Dr. Roll, his background was really in poltergeist phenomena. And it's just so much broader than we ever gave it, you know, credit for.
Sure.
Right. So, Steve, now Amy handles the spiritual side of your investigations, and you handle the research side. Now, being a former detective of New York City homicide, I'm sure that research, and not only just research investigation, went into that quite a bit. How does being a former detective work in your favor in doing the research on the cases?
Well, being a former detective and having my own PI company opens a lot more doors for me than, let's say, an amateur researcher might get. I get a lot more cooperation where we go because of my background.
Okay.
Which is tough because people ask me, oh, how do I go about doing this, doing that? A lot of times doors won't open for you unless you have that PI license to show them or, you know, tell me you're a retired detective, stuff like that. So that helps me, and as far as, you know, a case is, you got to go where it takes you, so I never know where it's going to take me.
Sure.
It's kind of like a tree, you never know what branch you're going to wind up taking, but it's very similar in some ways to what I used to do, but really a lot is not. I don't get to really interrogate anybody like I used to. You know,
unless you're some other television shows.
Yeah, that stuff gets cut. So, you know, I can be a little, not tough on the clients. I can just be, you know, a little bit, I'm not always going to say, oh, you see pink elephants? Oh, that's great. I believe everything they say. Obviously, I'm just going to, when I'm talking to them and I'm just listening, I'm really sizing up the whole situation.
Sure.
More than anything else, and it's almost, you know, it's the same as detective work. I mean,
sure,
it's the same thing. I'm just not investigating with a dead body in front of me. I'm investigating with former dead people, I guess, is the only way to put it.
Right, but do you have a limited time frame in which to conduct your investigation? Because you have a certain number of shows that you need to film, clearly, to get your season in, and
right.
I mean, you can't spend months chasing down a lead.
Well, when we first start. When we get the case and we know we're going to do it, I can do as much background stuff as I possibly can until I actually sit down and talk with people. So I have to have everything on standby in case I need a historian or I need an author. I got to have certain people on standby in case I do need to talk to them. So I have to reach out way in advance, which is very difficult to get people to cooperate that way. Mm-hmm. Let's say I'm going to be wherever I'm going to be and say, listen, I'll be out there in 2 months. I may need to talk to you, but I'm not really sure yet. You know, that type of thing. So that's where it gets difficult. And you're right. It only takes us 8 days to do an episode. And it's a lot to do in 8 days. I mean, season one, we did an episode in 4 days.
Oh, wow. Well, I was going to say, logistically, and Amy, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but logistically, it seems, Steve, that your job might be a little more difficult.
Yeah, I mean, not difficult in a sense physically like Amy goes through.
Right.
It's difficult in a matter of, well, I film a lot more than Amy does because, I got all these interviews to do. And
sure.
Probably 7 out of 10 make it to camera. The 3 or 4 of the interviews never make it to camera or never make it to the show.
Right.
They wind up on a webisode.
Right.
Right.
So there's a lot of stuff. You know, and I would get comments on Facebook all the time. Well, why didn't you ask about this? I happen to know this, this, and this happened. I'm like, Yeah, I know. You know, I did all that. It just then I made it bad.
Yeah.
So it is a little more taxing on me as far as time, but you know, it's part of the job. That's what I do. And Amy does something. I wouldn't want to do what she does. I'd rather do what I do. And, you know,
sure.
What she has to go through physically and emotionally. So.
Well, and that really actually segues into what I wanted to ask Amy, because, you know, I investigate as well, and probably not to the level that you do, but I get all of the physical things. That's one of the ways that spirits communicate with me is physically. And for me, it's a very physically taxing thing. So are you exhausted at the end of an evening? Do you have any after effects? I get a hangover the next day. Do you have anything like that, and how do you deal with it?
Yes. You know, being a physical medium, I see and hear them like I see and hear living people. And one thing that physical mediums do is we can also channel them so they can take over our bodies physically. I don't allow that to happen, but the way that I interact with them is extremely physical. So I have experienced 1,000 deaths, and that does harm the body because it's dead energy, and I'm alive. So obviously it's a very different cellular experience that I'm absorbing, and it's not particularly healthy.
Right.
But see, I try to, you know, detox and salt baths and meditations and eat and, you know, sleep and...
So do you wind up hungover? Like, I after an investigation, I inevitably have a migraine the next day.
I think you might be thinking about me being hungover. Are you sure you're talking about
that? Well, this is the medium hangover.
Oh, okay.
I'll have emotional hangovers.
Sure.
Yeah. See, now with you, Amy, you know, now with you, Amy, and with you know, Karen, you know, I myself, I'm kind of like Steve. I'm about as psychic as a brick, but you guys take care of you. Now, Amy, you are the one that feels the pain, that feels the energy, that sees the spirits. Steve, have you ever had that personal experience that was like, wow, I've just seen a ghost, or I've just experienced something spiritual? Have you had that yet?
Nope.
Bummer.
Nope. Want to?
Nope, not really. You know what? I spend a lot of time with the clients and just dealing with what they're going through emotionally. It's almost equivalent to, I would say, making a notification to a parent about their kid being dead.
That's rough.
I hear all the heartbreak they've been going through for years. I mean, these last few cases have been really tough on me emotionally because, you know, you got kids involved and stuff like that. And
yeah,
that's, you know, where for me emotionally it's tough. I, you know, as far as seeing apparitions and feeling coldness in a room, I don't feel any of that stuff. I probably never will because I don't think I'm hoping for it. I don't dismiss it, obviously, or else I wouldn't be doing the show.
Sure.
But I think on my end, it's more of living people experiences that I'm going through.
Yeah.
I had a lot of stress on the job with the stuff I saw and dealt with and stuff like that, but that's behind me. But this stuff, it takes its toll. We're not, you know, I have a mother of three crying in front of me because...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys can hear us well again?
Yeah, yes. Boy. Yes. Sorry about that. So, well, we got to where you were talking about the family with kids and how difficult that was. So, I think what we'll do is Rick wanted to follow up and actually ask about a specific case that had to do with kids.
Okay.
Is that good? Okay. Yeah, Steve. One of the episodes that I actually recently liked and I was watching bootlegged on YouTube the other night at work was, you know, you talk about dealing with kids. Now, as a dad, and I do live in a home that has entities in it, but they really don't bother my kid. You guys had a case where there was a mother and a father with 8 children. And,
Tisha.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Now, yeah. I mean, now, the picture that Amy had the guy draw was, I mean, even... It's kind of would scare me if I would see something like that. Can you talk a little bit about that case and how were these kids involved? Because they were scared.
Well, the one daughter, the oldest daughter, was being tormented. And not only was she being tormented by what was going on in the house, she was tormented because she wanted to protect her younger siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And if you saw the interview I had with her, where she breaks down and starts crying, I mean, to have an 18-year-old girl crying in front of me is very tough, to not want to just reach out and hug her.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously I can't do that on camera, because then the producers get, what are you doing? Don't be hugging people on TV.
Right.
But it's very difficult for me not to get emotional. I mean, I'm an Italian guy from Brooklyn. I'm going to be emotional anyway.
Mm-hmm.
and stuff like that, it breaks my heart to see this kid crying. I just want to take her in my arms and tell her it's going to be okay. My problem is I don't know if it's going to be okay until the end when I sit down with Amy. So that's the difficult part for me, because I'm hearing all what everybody's going through.
That's true, and you're hearing what Amy has to say for the first time at the end.
Right, and it's difficult to know all this information about, and at the end I'm like, please, God, just have Amy have a solution so these people can get back to being normal and not dealing with, a crisis every day.
Right.
And, especially when kids are involved, that's my big priority when we're following up on these submissions for the show, is, if there's children involved in it being affected, I want to handle that first.
Sure.
But they're innocent. They don't understand what's going on, and it's really not fit. And if there's parents that don't know how to handle it, what's happening, obviously, they don't. There's no rule book for this stuff.
Right.
That's the biggest concern.
Now, for you, Amy, with the same episode, this picture that you drew, it looks a little bit more like some science fiction bad guy rather than some Civil War general or some Civil War military officer. Now, I've actually seen this before, and I've experienced it myself. Why is it that certain entities will present themselves in a manner that is not, that is completely unlike what they really are?
Well, to me, it's always been them trying to intimidate me or deter me from continuing on the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Okay.
So they have the ability to project themselves in a manner that you would find fearful. They're going to try to do that if you are, finding out things that may not flatter them.
Mm. Sure. That makes sense. Well, when you were here in Seattle, one of the things that you saw, I believe it was down in the basement, were a bunch of small, like you said, I think you classified them as like little scurrying.
Yeah.
What was that?
Actually, those were, individuals who were maybe slaves or indentured servants, something of that nature.
Oh.
And it seemed to be that they were trapped somewhere, or they couldn't get out of wherever they were, and they ended up dying because of that.
Okay.
And they were very upset, and they kind of lost their humanity because of that anger and that vengeance that kind of took them over. And so they just kind of became these little creatures. Like,
that's,
the creatures represented,
that's horrifying.
What they felt.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually quite horrifying.
Which is why, you shouldn't have, vengeance shouldn't be in your heart.
Yeah,
I think that if people could see these things, when you see these things, you really see human nature. And it's very upsetting.
Yeah, and you see the effects of human nature. So, yeah. So I had one more question about Seattle. We actually put some, we put a question out on our Facebook page for the people who listen to the show to see if they had any questions for you. And Jill actually wanted to know if you had done any follow-up with Darcy from the Seattle episode.
No, she hasn't. I give everybody my personal contact information. Some of the clients I talk to on a weekly basis, and some never contact me. And we actually haven't really had much contact.
Okay.
From what I understand, she did not follow through with the instructions initially, and unfortunately became much more ill. And then I understood that she was going forward and finding a medium and an exorcist.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, I did want to touch on the Belvedere, Illinois, but I did want to ask you that question because that is a burning question of mine. Now, when you say exorcism, do you mean the actual Roman ritual banishing the enemy of God, or do you mean something a little bit more tailor-made?
Well, in that case, well, it does depend on the situation. In that particular case, yes, you know, it is... a banishment,
okay.
Because that's what the dead woman believed in. You know what I'm saying? So it
sure.
depends on what the dead person believes, and it depends on what the living people believe in as to what is going to be given to them to do.
Okay, I see. Yeah, that's just was kind of a concern because, like I said, from what I've always understand is that the Roman ritual is specifically for getting rid of, well, you know, little red guys in pajamas sporting
right.
pitchforks and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think that was kind of a question that a lot of people on our Facebook forum did have. So thank you for answering that, and I hope that that answers the question for our listeners as well and our readers. Now, you guys were in this, in season three, you guys were up here in my neck of the woods in northern Illinois, in Belvedere, Illinois, and which is about, I'm like in southern Lake County, so maybe 2.5 hours northwest of here in Boone County, but as far as the crow flies, as we say here in Illinois. But so can you guys tell us a little bit about that one? Because that was another one that seemed really frightening.
Yeah,
Steve,
I mean,
if you want to go.
There was a lot of things going on there, because three different generations of a family were being affected by it,
mm-hmm.
And Judy's son... was being affected by it from when he was a kid. And there was the stuff that went on that farm. Now, I did police work for a long time. I never heard of two brothers killing themselves in the same manner with the same gun years apart. So that kind of blew my mind. But I think Amy can probably answer it best as far as what was going on. There was stuff coming. What she drew over there.
Is that the one with the guy with the mask and the, like, the little weird feathery things and stuff?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It was just a matter of, you know, he described it to me as like a mask, and then there's Amy, you know, drawing, you know, doing a sketch and describing it as a mask. So after I saw what she drew, then I thought about this kid looking at this when he was like 3, 4, 5 years old. And
oh,
you
my
can only
gosh.
Imagine what it did to him, you know.
Yeah. Right. Holy cow.
Nice people, a really, really nice family. And, you know, that's when you're able to help people that are, mm-hmm. you know, down the road can understand why they were dealing with stuff like this. Like, he'll, at least now he has an answer why he was a kid and seeing this stuff.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. So, Elaine, on our Facebook page, actually wanted to know what has been your toughest case for each of you to deal with to date?
That's a good question. Well, I think it's different for both of us, obviously. I mean,
I can't talk about the one.
Yeah, some of it we can't talk about because it hasn't aired yet.
Okay,
of course.
But I think the toughest one for me, as far as with the family dynamics go, I think maybe the same for you, I don't know, was just 2 episodes ago that we filmed. It'll be in the 4th season. You know, I never felt such a heartache for a family like I felt for this family. That, for me, was the toughest part. I mean, you know, seeing a dead body in the street doesn't bother me. You know, that stuff don't bother me. Seeing the heartache of a family...
Yeah.
That
sure.
is devastating, especially when there's children involved. It just makes
us so all so good, such good people.
I mean, at the end of the night, they had care packages for us. I mean, it was just, you talk about sweet people, salt of the earth, and they just that was, for me, not so much tough, but I think emotionally draining than anything else.
Sure, absolutely. So that's coming up in season 4, which begins airing when?
You know what? That's a good question. You know what?
Season three was still airing.
You know what? I can never tell you when they're going to put us on. Sometimes we think there's a new episode on and there's a rerun. We're not in charge of that, obviously.
All right.
I would think. I would think May.
Great.
Start season. Yeah, May. You will probably start season four.
Okay, well, watch for it there. You go, Paranormal Underground listeners, watch for it. So, I haven't seen every single one of your shows, but I've seen a fairly good representation of them. And I have never yet, and I could be wrong, I haven't seen you say, no, this is not a workable situation, just get out. Has that happened?
Yeah, we've had a couple where you have come to Cedar Park, Texas.
I didn't see that one.
Season one do we have? Well, we had the doll case where they had to get rid of all the dolls.
Well, yeah, they just needed to clean it.
See,
the dolls are creepy.
The compo. It would have been better if she left.
Yeah, season one, our final episode of season one in a compo, California. Amy.
It would have been best, but, they're dealing with it. And then Austin, Texas, that one was. But that case was, she was renting that, and there were other factors going in that it was better for many reasons for her to go.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's fairly rare then, but I would imagine that if you have to deliver that diagnosis to somebody when you're talking about their home or their livelihood, how do you do that?
Well, I always put a disclaimer at the beginning, even before we go out there. I do a disclaimer and let them know, listen, we don't hold punches, we don't BS, we're going to tell you what we found, and we're going to give you, and I always tell people, I don't know what Amy's going to tell you. She may tell you to burn the house down, or she may tell you to sprinkle some salt, and you're going to be good. You know, if you go anywhere from a blessing of the house to burn the friggin' thing down, so you got two spectrums here. So I always tell them to be prepared for that.
Sure.
I think in our case, I think we're almost the final straw for a lot of people, because I find that a lot of people we're doing cases for now have had investigative teams go in there and really just basically tell them, yeah, you got a haunted house here, take care, which in my book is not okay.
No, that's not okay.
So for me, it's, these people, we're almost like their final straw. And it's not their fault. If they have paranormal investigators coming in, it's not their fault that they don't do all this background research, because they may not have the resources like I do.
Right.
They don't have a former detective on their staff, to let them be able to do the research or have a physical medium with them.
Or, someone who also has degrees in psychology and has studied, for years, not only, spirituality, various religions, but worked with people who utilize different manners of approaching a case and dealing with the outcome of it and making sure that something is resolved.
Right.
Of course.
Now, we had a case recently that hasn't aired yet, but the woman had two different investigative teams come in, paranormal investigative teams, I should say, and the things going on in the house got progressively worse each time another team came in.
Well,
they agitated them, and
That leads to another question, because you see on a lot of shows that somebody will have an exorcism in the house and things will quiet down for like 5 minutes, and then all hell will break loose. So what is it, how is it that your recommendations, are you just more tuned into knowing what needs to be done and the others are just kind of batting around in the dark, or how do you avoid that?
Well, I think what it is a combination. I did study under Dr. Roll for, 4 years.
Sure.
And at that point, he was in his 70s, and he had done so many investigations. I also do have a degree in psychology, which taught me to not only look at what the dead are going through, but also what the living are going through, what the psychological dynamics are, and also studying various cultures and religions. And so I think, you know, I just bring all of these things in, and then I have awesome guides that I work with too. And so I just kind of approach it from, you know, a multiple tool bag. You know, like I have a tool bag that I created from all of these people that I've been fortunate enough to work with or under, and they've given me the tools to be able to help.
Sure.
Now, Amy, there was an episode that I thought was really interesting, and that was the Arts Center episode. Now, I believe in that episode you became very physically ill. I've seen that a lot with mediums. That's my thing, is working with mediums and how it relates to afterlife investigations. Is that something that happens to you often, and can you explain what that is? Is that a physical illness or something spiritual?
While I'm doing the walk?
Yeah.
After
Well, what I'm questioning is like, is that something that you are feeling empathically from the entity, or is it actually causing you to feel physical illness?
Well, both.
Okay.
Because I'm a physical medium, when I'm on location, and if somebody was, like, stabbed to death, for instance, I'll physically and empathically feel that. Unfortunately, it's, you know, because I do physically observe it as well, you know, sometimes it makes me sick physically.
Okay.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Like on one episode, you know, when we were doing the investigation in, was it New Jersey? And I had to get the blood, I've had to have blood transfusion.
No, that was in Carmel, New York.
Okay, yeah, New York. I had to go, you know, overnight to get blood.
Yeah.
You know, things like that happen.
Well, so I know that you've had a lot of entities threaten you before you come in, say, you know, I'm going to kill you if you don't stop, things like that. How do you protect yourself from that? And do you ever get a little concerned?
I do get concerned, but I have to do this job, and that's all there is to it. And I do the best I can to protect myself, and I know my guides are looking out for me.
Sure.
But I have to do what I got to do, and, you know.
Right. Now, with the camera aspect of the show, you have Matt, who is he's following you around, filming you, but you also have a crew following you as well. With what Matt is filming on you, is that for the show as well as your own personal files?
I think it's more for a personal file. It's just that when Amy came into the show, this was her style of doing it. So they just basically, she needs to have a record of it, because sometimes she doesn't know what she sees during a walk. So being filmed before, it's just something she always did. Mm-hmm. And they just basically developed it into the show. Because we discussed it before we started. I'm like, why change anything we normally would do?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just do it the way we do it. And it helps because Matt asks a lot of great questions.
Yeah, he does. He's really good at that.
Yeah.
And, so
you have to have a non-leading interviewer.
Yes.
To get the who, what, why, when, and where.
Yes.
And they have to be really careful to not lead the sensitive.
Absolutely. Well, so, Amy, when you do a walkthrough, how present are you, and how I'm sorry, it's a tough question to, are you there 100%, or is there? No, okay.
Not at all. Yeah. That's why I curse a lot, you know?
Well, that's what I wondered, because sometimes your voice changes, sometimes your mannerisms, your facial expressions, that it all, it's different.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you remember it, or do you have to then
not
go back?
Not really.
Yeah, we'll be sitting down at the reveal, and she won't remember, you know, a lot of things that happened, and that's why we have notes for her, because it's tough. I mean, she's in and out of consciousness, well, not consciousness, but
awareness.
Yeah.
Sure.
So is that channeling then, or is that just an aspect?
I only let them put their arm into my body. That's it.
Okay.
Okay, that'd feel weird.
Feel like tickled somehow.
Take me over completely.
Well, that's probably
how to control it.
So what would you say to somebody who watches you on TV and thinks, okay, well, I might have these abilities, so I'm going to go out and do this right now?
Ooh, no, take your time. You know, there's wonderful sensitives out there that, you know, my whole thing is talk to everybody you can. Everybody's experience is unique and different, but I believe that everybody has something that you can learn from them. And it's important to do that. Take your time if you're going to do something like this. Learn how to protect yourself. Learn how to communicate well with your guide. You know, work with other sensitives. You know, like in my, you know, business, I work with, you know, many sensitives. And I also try to help. Because when I went through it, I didn't really have anybody. But I did talk and I read and I, you know, tried to learn as much as I possibly could. And that's why in my business, I work with many different types of sensitives. We're there for each other and we're there for, you know, whoever wants help.
Right.
But you have to be careful, very careful.
Yes. Thank you for that, because that's one of my biggest concerns about every paranormal television show I see is all the idiots that are going to go out and think they know what to do because they saw it on TV.
They're not, you know, my thing is that they're not, you know, if you know you have an ability, you are going to sometimes do stupid things.
Well, I've done stupid things.
You don't know what to do.
I call them idiots. Yeah, I've done it.
Yeah, me too. You know, you don't know what to do. You don't know where to go. You don't know what to, you know, but go down to your local metaphysical stores, you know, reach out to other sensitives, you know, don't go running out and doing it. But, you know, people will, because sometimes in some places they don't have those places where they can find refuge.
Sure, absolutely. Sure.
You know, Steve, for you, every week that I watch the show, I got to tell you this: you remind me of my stepdad.
I don't feel old enough.
Well, no. What I'm trying to say.
And that's the end of the interview. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's that.
What I'm getting at is this. What reminds me is that you have this. My stepdad is Sicilian. You have that same stare that's like, I will kill you right where you stand just with my stare.
Yeah.
And it's like, just like you, my stepdad loves what I do. However, he's skeptical. And I know that that's very common with Italians and Sicilians, like a healthy skepticism. Now, what did you think about this kind of work before you got involved in, you know, specter detecting?
I didn't think anything of it, to be honest with you, because I just never had an interest in it. Everybody wants that big question. I've discussed this on many interviews. Everybody wants to know what happens after you die. That's a healthy question, and I don't care who you are, everybody wants to know that answer.
Yes.
Even if you're a skeptic. So I think I just never, dealing with what I did on the police department, I was always dealing with, you know, what humans do to each other, you know, what living people do to each other. I just never really thought about this aspect.
Right.
And but once I started working with Amy, and I think we've talked about this, Rick, that my questioning has changed a lot since we started doing the show.
Yeah.
I just never had an interest in it other than really wanting to know the big question of what happens when you die. I'm hoping I don't get stuck now that I know too much. I wish I didn't really kind of know all the things I know now.
Right.
But that being said, I think, I've grown as a person since working with Amy, you know, because I'm learning as I go, which for me, I never thought, if you told me 5 years ago I'd be doing this, I would have never believed you, so.
Well, never know. Funny where life will lead, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny because people always come on my Facebook page and, you know, we get the comments that you two guys are perfect together, and I think in a sense, Amy talked about having a big tool bag.
Yeah.
I can interview the President of the United States, or I can interview a guy who just murdered 5 people and turn it on and off in different ways. I'm not the same person on every interview. When I worked the streets, I was tender and caring when I had to be, and I was a tough guy when I had to be. And that's not easy to do.
Yeah.
It's not easy to turn it on and off. But if you don't have any skill set that way, it's not going to work for you. So I think mine and Amy's approach to things and the way we are with people and how we do our jobs just complement each other.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, so we know that you guys had limited time, and we're going to wrap up with just one final question. And so this is for both of you and each of you. What one thing would you really like our listeners to know about your work?
You want to go first?
One or two things about what they could really...
What they'd really like to know about our work. Well, I know from my end, there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that doesn't get to camera or gets edited, I should say. I ask a lot of questions. Hmm. My interviews can last up to 2 hours. And
sure.
You'll see 3 minutes of it on TV.
Right.
It's frustrating for me because I almost feel like people think I'm not doing my job. And they have to know that I am asking, if they have a question in their head, well, why didn't Steve ask this? I can almost guarantee you, and I bet the mortgage on it, I asked it. It just didn't make it to camera.
Sure.
So that's the one thing I'd want the readers and the viewers to know, that even though you only see me nodding my head or saying, yeah, that would scare me too, there's 30,000 other questions I asked that never made it to air. And it's not the show's fault. It's not editing's fault. I mean, I do two-hour interviews with almost, let's say I do five interviews, for argument's sake, three of those mm-hmm. interviews are going to be at least an hour, if not 2 hours each. How are you going to fit that in on 42 minutes of TV?
Right.
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 That's
so
common sense.
I just want the viewers to understand that. Just know I am asking every question that needs to be asked. And when I sit down with Amy at the reveal, there's not a question she can answer me that ask me that I'm not going to be able to answer. That, too, wouldn't make it to air because our reveal lasts anywhere from 2 to 4 hours, and there's 9 minutes of it on TV.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So, Amy?
Well, that was a good answer.
Why?
It was a great answer.
Great answer.
Well, yeah, I mean, the walks are very long, hours. Just that I do take, protective measures, and that I do have to take care of myself afterwards, and, basically that we're really there for the people.
Yeah.
And, we try to have lasting relationships with the clients and help them through everything, because that's really why we're doing this, so.
Yeah,
great.
I mean, it's more of it's a TV show, and I tell that to all our clients, listen, I know it's a TV show, but we're here for you. Mm-hmm. Disregard the cameras, act as if they're not even here.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But as the show's going on and on now, people are a little bit, I'm nervous now, I'm going to be on TV, I see how the show is, but I says, never mind the cameras, we're here for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. great. That's the perfect way to end it. Amy and Steve, thank you so much for coming on, and I will really look forward to seeing season 4 coming up probably in May on the Travel Channel, right?
Yeah, don't hold me to when it comes out, but that's what I'm figuring, around May, because we're almost, I guess, a quarter away, or a third of the way through the third season.
And the third season comes back with new episodes on the 25th.
You're still part way through. Oh, see, I thought the third season was over.
No.
Okay, no, good.
2 episodes left in the third season.
Yep.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks,
and
guys.
I hope that you'll come back again when you have more time.
Absolutely. We'd love to talk to you guys again. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Bye.
Hi, this is Cheryl Knight, editor for Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Chad Wilson, Paranormal Underground Magazine's publisher. Every month, Paranormal Underground Magazine explores the unexplained by examining topics that range from haunted sites to ufology to cryptozoology. We also spotlight investigators and researchers who continue to pave the way in a field that seeks to answer some of life's most complex questions.
If you want to read about topics like psychic phenomena, demonology, conspiracy theories, crystals and herbology, and much, much more, visit ParanormalUnderground.net and start exploring the unexplained today. Visit us today at ParanormalUnderground.net and get a 12-month digital subscription for 15% off the cover price.
Hey,
Frazier. I'm here with my co-host of Paranormal Underground Radio, Rick Hale.
Hi, everyone.
We invite you to join Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network to explore the unexplained every Thursday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific and other times in the flyover states.
Each week we talk with investigators in the field, researchers, authors, and experts about topics that include paranormal investigation, ufology, cryptozoology, and spirituality.
So please join us each Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern for Paranormal Talk with great guests right here on HazyRadioNetwork.com.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at Paranormal UG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
This is Hazy, and you're listening to the Hazy Radio Network.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. We are your hosts, Rick and Karen, and this is Paranormal Underground Radio on the HazyRadio.com. And we hope that you enjoyed that interview that we did with Steve and Amy from the Dead Files. They're always great to talk to, very informative, very entertaining. Love the show. So now joining us, we have J.W. Holmes, who is the author of Holy Moon and the Nordic, and we're going to be actually talking about that tonight, as well as his creative partner, Mark Brer. So, guys, welcome back to the Underground.
Hey, thanks a lot. Good to be back on.
So
it's going to be one of those nights.
So, okay, the last time we had you guys on, we talked about Holy Moon, which of course was about a werewolf with some soul, right?
Yeah, he was a Christian werewolf, and he was kind of like a guard dog for the community and taking on all the evil ones.
Right.
Okay, but you've come out with something a little scarier, I understand.
Well, I wouldn't call it scarier. It's just in a different vein. We have three series that we're working on. This is the sci-fi series called The Nordic, and it's based after the alien race called the Nordics.
Right.
And it's it comes out this weekend. It comes out.
Oh,
and,
congratulations. That's exciting. I bet you're busy right now.
Yeah, well, yeah, I've been pushing pretty hard this week. I've been up past two nights, took a nap this afternoon, and now I'm here.
All right. Nap's good for the soul. I love taking a nap, you know?
It really is.
So, I haven't had a nap in 17 years, which incidentally is almost the age of my son, so there you go.
And it's based after the alien race called the Nordics.
Right.
And it's it comes out this weekend. It comes out.
Oh, and, congratulations. That's exciting. I bet you're busy right now.
Yeah, well, I've been pushing pretty hard this week.
Why are we in a loop?
Took a nap this afternoon, and now I'm here.
All right.
Nap's good for the soul. I love taking a nap, you know?
I thought we went back in time. Yeah, it really is.
I know, that's a little bit. I haven't had a nap in 17 years, which incidentally is almost the age of my son, so there you go.
I don't even know what to say.
It's Cheryl. The alien race called the Nordics.
Cheryl?
Cheryl.
Right. And it comes out this weekend.
Cheryl.
Yes. It comes out.
We're looping.
We're looping.
That's exciting.
Oh, for goodness sake.
We have Andrew Bajago on again.
I'm sorry.
You guys don't have to do much of anything. We're just going to keep replaying that one segment over and over. You good with that?
All right. Sorry about that.
This is the easiest interview I've ever done.
The chat room logged me out. And when I came back in, it was playing automatically. Sorry.
Oh, my goodness. So sorry.
Just because that happened, it's just another weird thing that's popped up since doing the Nordic. Because I don't have weird things that happen when I do Holy Moon. I don't have them when I'm writing the Paul Hawkinson series. But anytime I'm doing something with the Nordic, there's always something funny that goes on.
It's the men in black.
It's weird.
So do you think that you're experiencing some high strangeness then?
Well, I'll put it like this. Like, when I first started writing the Nordic, I was writing it as a screenplay back in 2009. It's been a long process for this book. And I was writing it for BBC and Sky over in the UK as a pilot for a series.
Okay.
And when I was doing that, there was a plane that just kept – it was just way too close to the house. And it, you know how like planes will have like a serial number or something on the belly of them?
Sure.
Well, I'd like to not see that, but yes.
But, yeah, this thing would be diving at the house. It was a red and white plane, kind of like a Cessna, and it would just keep – getting a little too close. And I live out in the country, and it's pretty much just my house out here. So, I mean, there's nowhere, it's not diving on anybody else's house except mine. When I went to, that was pretty bizarre when it happened. I let it go. But when I started working on the book, there was a yellow plane that came back, and I drive pretty much the only non-wooded area that we have out here. And it would get, I thought it was just going to come through the roof. It was getting that close. Whereas, like, it did shake the windows, stuff like that. When I finished, you mentioned the Men in Black.
Yeah.
When I finished the book, from transfer to screenplay to the book, which is a book that'll be out this weekend, I walked out to the garage and stood out there just to take a breath. And at the end of my drive was a black car. And granted, I live on a county highway. And, you know, sometimes cars break down.
Sure.
But this car was just totally black. It was just sitting at the end of the drive. And it was, you know, I didn't really feel anything weird about it, but you kind of feel like you're being watched.
Sure.
Okay.
But, yeah, it was a little eerie.
Well, so what did you do for research that you, or are you too close to an answer? What did you do for research that got people looking at you, do you think?
Well, if that's even what they were doing. I mean, all these things are coincidental, too.
Sure.
I don't want to read too much into it, but boy, you hear story after story about people that do books on aliens and stuff like that, and they have weird stuff that happens to them, too. But like I say, I mean, I write any other series, this stuff doesn't happen. But when I write the Nordic, every time I'm doing something with the Nordic, that's going to take it to another level. Something weird happens. As far as the research, I mean, basically, you know, I scoured for stories in the Nordics. I kind of took from my own ancestry being Scandinavian American. And also, you know, a lot of my research as an amateur astronomer and what I know about the stars and the clusters up there, and just kind of put it all together. And, it, you know, really I was just looking to do a nice fiction story on sci-fi, but the Nordic is primarily based on the idea that nobody down here, meaning you and I and everybody else, are actually from Earth. You know, maybe we all came from another place, you know, and we were just dropped off here. Maybe that's why we have different races on planet Earth, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I am Scandinavian, at least 3/4 of me is. So I'm from the Nordic alien race. I've never heard of the Nordic alien race. I'm not a big alien person. Mm-hmm. So
I never heard of the Nordics either, but you know, being Scandinavian, when I heard of a race called the Nordics,
yeah,
boy, my ears kind of perked up.
Yeah.
Because you know? You hear about the Greys, you hear about the Reptilians, you hear about the Anunnaki. But the Nordics are really kind of in the background. And I think one of the reasons why is because unlike the Reptilians or the Greys or the Anunnaki or whatever, the Nordics really don't interfere. You know, they like staying in the background and just watching over us kind of, you know, whereas the Greys like to meddle and cause a lot of confusion.
Right. See, and the thing is like I've heard from, you know, and I've read in a lot of different books, and I've heard from some different people that the Nordics are the guys who are like the they're like who is really in charge of the Intergalactic Federation.
Yeah. And you know, in the Nordics, I've read reports where you know, witnesses who have said that they've talked to Nordics have been warned about the Greys by the Nordics. You know, mm-hmm. and saying that, hey, you know, what happened to us is what the Greys did to us is what's going on with you. And they're infiltrating all levels of government and, you know, like say like they run the CIA and all that. So all that stuff, you know, kind of leads to kind of think that the Nordics are kind of here to protect us.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's a, if they're out there and stuff. But I mean, from the stories I got, that's what I was able to deduce.
Sure. Well, you know, when you think about, you know, when people started to really report the Nordics, now I know that a lot of people would look at it like it was in the 1950s, blonde hair, blue eyes, they were, you know, what, the master race or whatever. And a lot of people really thought at the time that, okay, it's like these aliens or stories of them are fiction and they're kind of racially motivated. I suppose. I mean, it would make sense. It's the 1950s. Everybody wanted a blonde hair, blue eyed kid, you know? So of course we got these aliens that come along, but you know, what is the history of these Nordics? Who was the very first person to actually say, hey, I'm seeing these, you know, Scandinavian Swedish type dudes coming down in spaceships?
Well, you're not going to like my answer, I don't think. But I think the first guy that actually kind of nonchalantly made comment on that was Hitler.
Right.
If you noticed how much of a space program he was trying to build, and a lot of there was definitely a Nazi connection there. Right. I don't know that the Nordics liked Hitler, you know, or anything, but I think Hitler liked them. Mm-hmm. And I think he took a little, you know, some things a little too far. You know, from whatever message that they gave him or whatever. And I think he saw them, was so influenced by them. He was like, okay, this is it. This is who we got to be. And of course, he had that whole Teutonic belief, and he got involved with Norse mythology real heavy. And he started, you know, really kind of going crazy with the whole thing. Right. But yeah, I mean, if you read, you know, about Hitler and his beliefs and stuff, I mean, it stems from you know, kind of an otherworldly Nordic genre kind of deal.
Well, sure. There are even stories that I have heard that Wernher von Braun, one of the mm-hmm. foremost rocket scientists that we, you know, came from Germany, came over to the U.S. and eventually built the Saturn V rocket for the Apollo program. But there are stories where Von Braun and others were actually interviewed and stated that they were given information by other beings.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that's interesting, you know, what kind of beings they were, or whatever they were, but it's an interesting story.
Right. I know with like the Nazis were really big on the whole, you know, inner earth and master race living in the inner earth and all that kind of thing. Correct?
Yeah, they were. And they would develop you've heard of the Bell?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody knows what that was except, you know, whatever scientists were working on it.
So could you explain it for our listeners who don't know and don't know what that is?
Basically, it's a structure that it's a round structure that looks like it's supported on several different legs. You know, it's a concrete structure, but it's kind of weird. Look, it looks like a place that you would place a flying saucer on top of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, to keep it off the ground. But it's got like all these different archways underneath it. You know, I guess that's why I call them legs, because they have these like spaces you can walk underneath, you know, the sides of it. But I mean, nobody knows what it really was.
Right.
And if, you know, like if that Eric von Braun knew what it was, he told people, they're not saying anything. So really, I mean, we're left kind of in confusion as to what the purpose of it was. But I mean, it's being studied by a lot of scientists, and nobody seems to be able to come up with it. I mean, it might as well be Stonehenge, you know, it might like the Nazi Stonehenge or something.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of scientists UFO enthusiasts that kind of think that this had to be some sort of, it had to have a purpose for a higher technology that just isn't of this earth.
Well, I know with the Bell, you know, a lot of people thought that the crash spacecraft in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, in 1965,
yeah.
was actually the Nazi Bell that had gone, you know, 20
yes.
years or whatever into the future. So there was a lot of speculation that was it actually alien technology, or did the Nazis, were they able to finally achieve time travel?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good thing to bring up, because I don't know I buy into that
mm-hmm.
necessarily. I think as far as the Kecksburg incident, I think that was probably just an independent thing. But yeah, I've heard the same thing, that it could have been, you know, part of the Nazi, you know, Bell thing back right. over there. But yeah, I don't know, because, I mean, if you look at the size of it, it's just... it's not big enough to have been supported on that.
Right, right. So with now hybrids in the Nordic, they're an incredibly fascinating subject. You got guys like Antonio Villas-Boas, who claimed that he had sexual relations with an alien. You have other people that claim to be abducted by aliens, especially women, and they're impregnated somehow, and then they're abducted again later, and the baby gets, you know, taken away. How does hybrids figure into the Nordic?
Well, the main character, whose name's William Davidson, he's just, you know, kind of a lucky go guy. It's just really down on his luck. He himself turns out to be kind of a hybrid. And I think there's really two ways that you become a hybrid alien, you know, kind of being. And one is, you know, is to be abducted and implanted with something, you know, especially if you're a female, and give birth to one, you know, and that alien technology, you know, gives that result. Another one, I think, is to actually have been, you know, in the story, there was a fraction of the Nordics that actually just stayed here, and they ended up mingling with, you know, other races and whatever. And for him, it got back to the original DNA through generations.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all, you know, it's, if you really want to, you know, reach, I guess I could say, like, you know, according to the fiction story of the Nordic, we're all alien hybrids, really. You know,
right.
if we're all descended from aliens, then, you know, it's just another way to be another alien hybrid.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely one of the most, you know, fascinating portions of ufology. And a lot of people, they're really, you know, kind of skeptical on it. They say that, you know, of course, we're two different species. But there's also another theory that says we're really not that different after all, that these grays or Nordics or whatever are actually, you know, they're us from the future. And we have to repopulate ourselves.
Yeah. And I guess that's possible.
Sure.
The issue I had with that is, I guess, like, how far away from being human did we get that we would come back, you know, especially with the grays, and do the things that they're alleged to be doing to us, you know? Why would they be doing it if they're us?
Right.
You know, why would they be kidnapping us and taking us up to the spaceship and, you know, putting chips in us and, you know, taking our children and putting them in, you know, in racks, you know, to
intergalactic daycare.
Exactly. You know, I mean, it's just, did we really, I guess, you know, morphosize into something that was just that unfeeling, you know?
And I think we're on our way.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the third series that we're doing, the Paul Hawkinson mysteries, maybe he'll save the day on that. So, because yeah. it's kind of a conspiracy line, but yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, boy, you just, for that to happen. I've heard that from a lot of, you know, really proficient people in the field too. That's a possibility. You know, it's a decent hypothesis, but. Boy, I mean, they're not even human anymore.
Yeah.
You know what? Evolution is a weird thing. We've almost part of the theory is that we are so evolved that we've almost evolved ourselves out of existence, and that's why we're coming back in time, repopulating the whole thing. But you know, with the Nordic though, it. You know, I believe Billy Meyer was one of the Americans that was the first one to say, "Hey, these people are visiting us." Is that correct?
I don't know about that.
Oh,
okay. I don't know where the visitation, because I think they've been going on for centuries.
Sure.
I don't. You know, maybe he was like one of the more recent ones to actually, you know, go into print. Mm-hmm. You know, to have said that, but I think it very well could have dated all the way back to the Egyptians, you know, to the Hopi Indians. You just don't know. I mean, you have people like Zechariah Sitchin talking about it with the Sumerians. That's right. Going quite a ways back, you know. And if you think about it, it has to have happened way back then because, I mean, for over like 30,000 years or something like that, we've been beating sticks and rocks together, and that's the best we could do.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, the Anunnaki come down, and poof, just overnight, now we're building structures, you know, we know how to ferment beer, you know, I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, of course something had to kickstart it.
Well, you know, and then I'm actually of the mind that just because you're ancient doesn't mean that you're stupid.
No, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, it's...
But it just happens so fast.
Right, right. But that's human innovation for you. I mean, one second we're, you know, riding bicycles, and the next second we're flying in airplanes. I don't know, I always thought that the whole ancient astronaut thing did a real, real disservice to humans as a whole, and, you know, partly thanks to the guy with the really crazy hair.
Yeah, his hair is pretty crazy, isn't it?
No, it's not that bad. I'd love to talk to him. I think it'd be fun to talk to him, actually.
So. Oh, yeah, I think it would, too.
Just as a guy who gels his hair, I just have to wonder how much does he have to gel his.
Maybe it just grows that way. After a time, it just, that's what it does.
Yeah, it could be.
So what do you think about some of these ancient alien theories?
I think some of them, you know, if you're talking about the show.
I meant the ancient astronauts. I'm sorry. Things like, you know, they helped us build the pyramids and the lines.
Well,
and
I think there's some validity to some of it. I think, you know, when you talk about the show and what some of the reports coming from some of the people, the top people in the field, I guess, the more famous people in the field, you know, I think they get by with some stuff. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Kind of, you know, they're not, it's kind of like, yeah, you say that here, but, you know, then, you know, you wait an hour and then they say something else that doesn't contrive with what they said the last hour.
Right.
And I noticed things like that.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely.
So, well, that's why I like to. No, go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, so this is a work of fiction.
Right.
And you've been talking about, well, the people I've talked to have said this, and this is what's in my book. So how about you? What do you believe, both of you?
You want to go first, Mark?
Sure. I can just start with when JW came to me with the idea, and he wanted to, you know, was telling me about it and about the Nordic and his ideas about the story, and I thought it was a really neat story because we had, you know, when we think of entertainment today or stories about aliens, we think of there's always something involving an invasion or some sort of a, you know, a being coming from the sky and coming down and doing something or landing somewhere or appearing somewhere. And but the whole concept I thought of the alien, you know, alien races being here and human beings, you know, being part of alien races. And I just thought, you know, descending from alien races and that whole idea, I thought, really begged to be, you know, brought into the mainstream, being it could be a fun and exciting story. It could go on in all kinds of different directions. And I know there are other beings around. I know that, you know, human beings are not just on the earth by themselves.
Sure.
We're being, you know, influenced by beings, you know, all different kinds. And so I think it's a neat story. The Nordic is just, it's not just your standard formula of invasion and aliens come here. It's just something new, and they're here. They have been here, and you might be one.
And people like a good alien story, don't they?
Yeah. Sure.
People love a good alien story. I like a good alien story.
Yeah, but it keeps you up at night, Karen, you know.
Well, all sorts of things keep me up at night. You know, it's all right. Yeah.
Who needs sleep? For Mark and I, I think we just got tired of the same old story over and over again that we see in the movies and on TV and whatever, and even in comics, which the Nordics also were developing it into a comic book now, too.
Now you're talking my language.
Yeah. In fact, you know, if listeners want to go to my website at authorjwholmes.com and click on the Nordic, you can see a preview of it right there, that Mark's artwork and all that. We've already started sending it out to publishers and talking with them about that.
Oh, how fun.
We think that'll be a big hit. Well, you know, we want it in two different genres because I think it has a place, you know, in book form. But when I first published the screenplay 2 years ago, I had fans writing me and saying, you know, this really would do good as a visual story, whether on TV or in a comic book. And I already tried the TV angle, and I didn't want to go through that again. So I started thinking, because I'm a former producer, so I started thinking about, you know, doing comics. And I have never done comics before, and I started researching it. And the more I researched it, I was like, as a business, I was like, boy, this is a lot like producing. You know, except you don't have to deal with crew, you don't have to deal with equipment, you know, you don't have to deal with, you know, with catering and all that stuff. It's just you and the story, you know, basically. And, you know, finding Mark, I mean, that was just too much. I mean, his artwork's just off the chart.
Yeah, it's pretty cool looking. I'm looking at it right now.
You like that?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go check it out after the show here.
I think it'll be a big hit. I really do. In fact, I bet the comic actually eclipses the book to a certain point. Yeah, you know, once that gets up. But the storyline, you know, you always see these alien stories, and I've told Mark this. I get so tired of seeing, you know, the aliens come down, you know, like he was talking about, and then they invade.
Sure.
You know, it's over and over again.
And
you always seem to have these five college, you know, forget the United States Army or anybody like that. It's always down to, like, five college students to save the day, you know.
It's like your normal found footage type flick.
Yeah, it's like they somehow break into the defense minister's office and press the secret button, and the nerd of the group knows how to do it. You know, it's just ridiculous.
So you're fighting against the formulaic, is what you're saying. Good for you.
Well, and think about that. Is that and you know, you've got the people who seem to be fighting against, you know, if they rise up against you know, a certain part of the alien race, and they say, you know, you need to, you know, we know who you are, you need to leave, or we'll, you know, or whatever they might say, but then they're not even realizing that they're of alien descent as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's I like that aspect to it, actually. Hey, we only have a few more minutes, but I wanted to ask you guys about your collaboration really quickly before we go to, you know, like websites and all of that. So sure. How is it, how do you guys work together? What are your specific roles? Because JW, I can't help but notice that yours is the name on the book and the website. So tell me about your collaboration.
Well, Mark, he did the cover for the book. Mm-hmm. He also does all the artwork. His name's in the book. It's all over the comic, really. It just happens to be on my website.
Sure.
He should have it on his, you know, if he wants it on there. You know, he's more than welcome to, but yeah, I mean, it's a joint thing. It really is. I'm probably just more active publicly with it than he is. Just cause I'm like the promotion guy too. You know, I'm the one.
Yeah, well,
the stuff.
Sure. You each have your own roles, but you clearly have collaborated on a lot of things, correct?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about, you know, as much as we can. We'll communicate, you know, whether over Skype or the phone or email, back and forth over different things. You know, Jay will come up with an idea and he'll say, well, what do you think about this? And I'll come back and say, that sounds pretty good. Or I'll have an idea for a visual.
You're supposed to say it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's
every
just,
time,
you know, we'll
that's
just
great.
Go back and forth and, yeah, but, you know, when it all started, when Jay came to with the ideas, and he's the storyteller. He created it, and I'm just kind of putting some flesh on the whole idea, helping him do that.
He did shoot my idea down for a story about a robotic werewolf, though.
I can't imagine why
that didn't pan out.
So. I don't understand that. What's wrong with you, Mark? So I think that's great.
It would be awesome.
Yeah. I think it's fantastic that you have somebody, that you have that kind of a working partnership, because mm-hmm. that's not always the case. And the fact that you guys are able to collaborate is fantastic.
And a lot of comic book publishers will tell you, too. I mean, it doesn't always work out like what Mark and I have. There's always somebody that's going to get greedy.
Yeah.
You know, and they warn you about that before they want to sign you. It's like, hey, look, you guys are doing this together, or we're not doing this at all.
Yeah.
You know, because we're signing the both of you.
Somebody should do that with rock bands.
Yeah, they should. Yeah.
Oh, my God. The egos that are, it's especially in a creative field, the egos that just get involved.
Yeah. And I mean, if you think about it, and I've told Mark this, I mean, you know, you go with who you brought to the dance. I mean, that's mm-hmm. how you got there to begin with.
Right.
You know, and if you think about like Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, I mean, there's a reason those guys were great.
Yeah.
It's because, you know, they didn't let their egos get in the way. They just wanted to create and make something good.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, as an artist, that's really what you should be looking to do.
Well, sure. It's about the product. It's about the creation rather than the creator. That's I'm a writer, and I believe it's about what I put out, not about mm-hmm. me. So I get it. So you guys have been incredibly good sports, because we got you on later than we were supposed to. So I wanted to give you an opportunity before we let you go to tell us where people could get the book. You said it's coming out this weekend. When the next book is coming out as well. You said it's the Paul Hawkinson?
Is that right? Paul Hawkinson Mysteries is a conspiracy-based series. It's based on a guy who, it actually kind of represents kind of what's going on now, even though I had the idea for it last year, where, there's a soldier, he's in special operations, he's attached to special forces in the psychological operations division. He gets cut because of budget cuts. So he's separated, sent back home, and because of his skills, he has nothing to do in the civilian market. I mean, he has nothing really to do. And then cousin calls from Denver and says, hey, you know, the police say that my friend was accidentally killed, but I think she was murdered. He goes out there and investigates, starts a whole chain of events.
Okay.
And he ends up traveling the world and investing. It's kind of like the X-Files, but from like almost a Jason Bourne kind of frame of mind, really.
Okay, well, that sounds pretty fun. That does sound cool.
And that'll be out in April, May.
Okay. Then. Wow, you are going to be super busy.
Yeah, there's a reason I don't get sleep.
Yeah, well, there's a reason I don't either, but that's totally different.
That's because aliens are watching you in your room.
Exactly.
That's right. Aliens are watching me, and
they're not just watching her; they're filming her.
I might, and I'm still trying to wrap my brain around the time traveler that we talked to last week. And yeah, it's the show. It's the show that does it to me. So, your website is authorjwholmes.com, and where are the books going to be available?
This weekend, they will be available on Kindle and the Nook.
Okay.
Next week, they'll extend to Lulu and also Kobo. Okay. And it'll be in paperback probably within the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Great. And great. Mark, do you have a site where people can go and find you and some of your fabulous artwork?
I do. It is lightspeedstudiosonline.com.
Great name.
Great.
Lightspeed Studios. Yeah. I'm looking it up. Rick, bring it home while I look it up.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, guys, for joining us tonight. I just wish that we could have had a little bit more time to talk a little bit more about, you know, aliens and alien abduction and alien hybrids. And, you know, Karen said, we do apologize for whatever it was that was going on. So, you know, hopefully we can have you guys back on again, you know, for the third time, and hopefully third time will absolutely be the charm. So
when the Paul Hawkinson books come back.
Sound good?
And we can actually do you justice instead of giving you a half an hour.
That's first time we were on, you were sick.
Yeah, sorry.
Then of course have the problem. So next time, yeah, I mean, nothing. I don't think there's anything left to go wrong.
Oh, you just hold that
just
thought.
Just wait.
Yes. You just hold that thought. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. We have about 15 minutes of business left to take, so thank you guys so much.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Thanks.
All right. So, cool. They sound like a cool couple of books, and I'm especially interested in the Paul Hawkinson stuff. I have never heard of Nordic aliens.
Really? You never heard of it? I mean, I think pretty much throughout the 1950s, that was what people were mostly seeing. It really wasn't until the 60s when the Betty and Barney Hill, when they had their abduction experience, they were the ones that first started reporting on these, you know, thin, short,
the
grays. Yeah, exactly. You know, not little green men, but gray. And believe me, I have actually been corrected before by, UFO nerds. So it does happen. But yeah, and a lot of people looking back on the whole, you know, the people seeing the Nordics and all that, it's like I said, they were, you know, sort of, they thought, well, these kind of are racially motivated because this was considered the acceptable paradigm at the time that, you know, the white, blonde hair.
Yeah, exactly. Eyes. And I guess that may be what I sort of just always thought was that was just sort of an evolution of the alien in general.
Right.
Because of our cultural beliefs.
Yeah. And a lot of people, like I said, they do believe that the Nordics are the, if the Nordics are in fact, you know, an alien species, that they are the ones who are really in control of what goes on in the universe.
Oh, well, okay. So I would love to continue to talk about this, but, you know, I need to sleep tonight.
Yeah, so, it'll scare us.
No more. Yeah, because I'm such a big chicken, I'm so afraid to talk about any topic. but no, wanted to talk about a few things. So, Cheryl.
Hi.
Hey, new issue of the magazine out.
Yeah, but wait, so does that mean I can't tell you about Chad's encounter with a Nordic alien?
Chad, no way.
Chad, really? Seriously?
Well, yeah, I mean,
it wasn't just a Dungeons and Dragons happened. Thing?
No, he was, I think it might have been a train station, and he saw a strange, like, tall, Nordic-looking thing, and with a little, tiny, cloaked thing, and, like, mm-hmm. I don't even know if I'm doing his experience justice, but they look so strange that he turned, like, he didn't want to appear to be staring.
Oh,
so
wait, you've told me about this before.
Yeah.
I've never heard this before.
Yeah, you'll have to talk to him about it, but he basically turned away to, like, avert his eyes so he wasn't staring, and he turned back and they were gone.
Yes, I have heard that story.
They were in
before.
The middle of the room and then gone.
I've never heard that before. That's amazing.
So, sweet dreams. Okay. Yeah, we have some announcements, and because we had a shortened show, we didn't get to them at the top of the show, but I'll just try and fit them in really quick. We have an awesome new issue out of Paranormal Underground magazine. It's the March 2013 issue. It can be found online at paranormalunderground.net. And to give a quick promo, it's basically on the cover of the issue, we have Amy Allen and Steve DeShavi. And I want to thank both of them for doing the pre-record with us. And then also thank JW and Mark for coming back again and talking about their work and some cool alien discussion. That was awesome. Also in this issue, we have a new column from Katie Christopher of NEPA's Ghost Detectives. She wrote about Area 51, and it's about the conspiracy theories of Area 51, not alien. See, my brain is like alien on the brain. And so that's a really cool column. You should check it out. There's a story on children and the demonic. There's a story on talismans, amulets, and charms. There's a story on the amazing world of herbology, UFOs over South America. Rick did something on an encounter with Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just
not
this,
my own personal encounter, but
no,
the Albert Osman story.
Thank you. It was an interesting story. I had never heard of that before myself, but very interesting account. And Karen has another funny top 10 paranormal list in there. It's the top 10 crazy coincidences. Mm-hmm. Really, really funny.
That was really
stuff.
Good. I thought it was funny. I was reading it last night at work.
Yeah.
Crazy, huh?
There's so many good things in the issue that I can't even talk about them all. So,
all right. Well, yeah, then we shall not.
Yeah. Let's move on. So check that out. I also wanted to announce a new contest that we're running on Paranormal Underground. And we were supposed to do this earlier in the show, but the contest is really cool. It starts now and it ends at the end of the month, March 31st. If you want to participate in the contest, what you have to do is you have to listen to Paranormal Underground Radio and get our code word for the month or code phrase. And then what you're going to do is you're going to email editor@paranormalunderground.net with the code word. And with, what was the other, you also have to tell us what was the name of the doctor involved in the March 2013 issue's Are We Alone column. And that Are We Alone column is called UFOs Over South America. So you actually have to read the magazine.
But anyway. The prize would be?
The prize is super cool, and it's from our good friend Rob Marie. You can visit Rob Marie at Rob Marie. .com. That's Robyne Marie, MARIE.com. And she is giving away a ton of awesome stuff valued at $100. She's giving away a dream pillow with lavender. She's giving away a bleeding skull candle large. Giving away a summer solstice kit with a ritual candle, holistic oil fragrance, herbs, velvet pouch. She's giving away a $35 gift certificate for any reading with her or ministry service that she provides. She's giving away a t-shirt, a really cute t-shirt. I kind of want this. It's got a slogan on the front called Through the Eyes into the Spirit World, but it's really cool shirt.
No cheating, Cheryl.
And also,
so
I know I can't participate
to win those things then if they give you that information, or do they win?
There's a drawing. There's actually a drawing, so there's going to be one winner for the grand prize, valued at $100, And also Rob Marie will give you an autographed copy of her book called The Harvey Boat. And so that brings us to the code phrase of this week's show. And yes, actually, it's
the Harvey
telephone.
It's not mine.
It's the Harvey Boat. That's our code phrase. So if you want to enter this contest, email editor@paranormalunderground.net with the phrase The Harvey Boat. And then go check out our March issue. And also include in that email the name of the doctor that was mentioned in the Are We Alone column in March 2013.
Spectacular. Yeah. All right. Do we have other announcements?
Yes. Listen to Paranormal Underground Radio each and every week on the Hazy Radio Network.
Oh, was that the announcement?
Yes.
HazyRadio.com.
Yes.
Also, Oregon Ghost Conference this weekend. I'll be there. I'll be speaking Saturday morning at 10, but I'm going to be there the whole time, and it starts tomorrow evening at 5.
Oh,
and
wow.
That goes through Sunday night. So if you happen to be in the vicinity of Oregon City, please come on by the Pioneer Center. A lot of Paranormal Underground peeps going to be there, not just me. So,
can you tell us a little bit about it?
What's that?
Can you tell us a little bit more about who'll be there?
Oh, what the topics will be?
Okay. Well, we do have a few minutes here.
Would you like me to?
I would like to know more.
I thought I told you the most important person.
Well, what? You'll be there. Yes,
that's right.
Great.
So, from Paranormal Underground, hey, you made it back. Glad to hear you.
Yeah, I made it back.
Rick bailed on us, but he's back. those bran muffins again, Rick.
No, it wasn't the bran muffins again. It's gremlins in my system. That
yeah, all night, I tell you. So, anyway, Rob St. Helen, who writes the Tales from the Haunted Heathman, is going to be there.
Oh, great.
Silver Moon Medicine will just be there on Saturday, and she does art herbology and is it crystals or magic that she does?
She does both. She does crystals, herbology, and magic and lore.
Okay.
There's two columns. Yeah,
Dave Galvin will be speaking. He's speaking tomorrow evening. I believe his time is 6, but I'm not sure. And he's going to be talking about science and the paranormal, and he claims that he's going to make all of his colleagues hate him, but I told him he didn't need to worry about it. I already did. So, see, it's okay. Let's see. Neil McNeil, you know how much we love Neil.
Yeah.
And he will be there, and he's going to be selling copies of his video that he made, his parapsychology video. It was a dark and stormy night. He's also going to be speaking. I believe he's speaking at 3:00. Elaine Davison will be there, and of course she'll be talking about paranormal safety. William Becker, who writes our psychic column, is going to be there because he is actually one of the ones who puts on this conference, and he leads ghost tours in the evening, and it's just really such a good time. Come on down. We have a good time. We really have fun.
I wish I could be there. I really am.
I know you're missing out.
You're going to report to us next Thursday, right, Karen, on the radio show?
I will report next Thursday, and hopefully... Hopefully, if I live through it, I'm in the haunted room, so...
Oh. Well, I hope
I
you
okay.
capture
the
some evidence.
For you.
So, yeah, that's my big weekend. And, of course, I will be selling the jewelry that I design. And I'll also be selling my new book, Dancing with the Afterlife, signing it. And I am going to be talking about afterlife research, and not just mine, because mine really is nothing compared to the body of work that some of the great people in this field have done. I'm going to be talking about the afterlife research of, that's been done at the University of Arizona and done by Dr. Michael Newton and just by some of the really biggies in the field who, you know, I'm humbled in just to talk about them, because people don't realize how much research has really been done and how much is out there that seems to support that the afterlife is a real thing.
Yeah. Yep. Totally.
So that's it. That's all I got.
Well, that's exciting. I can't wait to hear about it. And next year we're going to be at that Oregon Ghost Conference no matter what.
Oh, it's like I say, it is just a lot of fun. It's, good speakers, good times. We have a really good time, and a lot of people attend, and, We're not having the party in my hotel room this year because last year the guy below us called and yelled at us. So this year it's somebody else's turn to get called and yelled at. That's all. So, this has been our first show on the Hazy Radio Network. Yay. And I've got to tell you, we were off to a little rocky start, but I just want to say we're really happy to be here.
Yes.
To me, coming onto the Hazy Network feels a lot like coming home. This is a group of people, the shows, the hosts, the management of the station, who are really dedicated to following their passion and supporting other people in doing that as well. Mm-hmm. And so for Rick and Cheryl and Chad and I, it's just a really good fit because we're very passionate about what we do. Mm-hmm. And so we're really happy to be part of a group of people who are just as excited about what they do as we are about what we do.
Agreed 100%.
Agreed. You know, the progress and the innovation that's going on here at hazyradio.com is just top-notch.
Absolutely.
It really is amazing. People should come and check out the site, hazyradio.com.
Listen
check
to
out
the shows.
All the show. Oh my God, there's so many shows. They're so cool. They're so interesting. There's music shows. There's paranormal shows. There's so many. There's so many different topics.
They have the monthly show guide that is a free download as well, and it's got more than just stuff about the shows. So, absolutely, come on by. It's hazyradio.com. I am thrilled to say that because we had a pre-record, neither Rick nor I slipped up and said the name of our old network because I have been practicing in the bathtub. Oh, also, Monday, tune in to Zeta's show on Monday, and she will be interviewing moi.
Yay!
I was just going to look and see what time. Yay. I think it's 5 p.m. Pacific, but we've got to go, so look it up.
Look it up.
That's right. So thank you, everybody, for listening to Paranormal Underground Radio on Hazy Radio. We will be back next week, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and other times in the flyover states. You guys all have a good night.
Good night.
Good night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor at paranormalunderground.net. Until next time, keep exploring the unexplained at paranormalunderground.net. Please join us next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network.